found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
Now, broadcasting
from the City of Angels,
Los Angeles.
You're listening to The Sheena Metal Experience with your host, Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
That's right, it's the Sheena Metal Experience right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, latalkradio.com, sheenametalexperience.com. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show and to call and talk to us live. 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. My first guest is making his debut here on the Sheena Metal Experience, and in typical post-holiday week style, is stuck in what I like to call LA traffic of the damned. So we're going to take our quick break, do a word from our sponsors, hear from them, then we're going to come back and we will be here. I am desperately seeking my guest. He's got a brand new television channel that's launching in the fall, and I think you're going to love hearing his story. It's the Sheena Metal Experience on LA Talk Radio. Quick break, and we're right back with much more radio fun.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
Continue to consider the source. Elizabeth has the voice of an angel and the looks of a movie star. She's performed everywhere from Carnegie Hall to the Knitting Factory in Hollywood. This critically acclaimed singer-songwriter reveals it all in her authentic and powerful CD, Breathe In, now available on Desert Sunrise Records. See, hear, and buy Brittany Elizabeth at BrittanyElizabeth.com.
Passion to create the finest quality instrument available anywhere. That's what Minarek Guitars is all about. With his patented tone chamber engineering, Mark Minarek revolutionized the sound of the guitar and bass. He transformed the ordinary guitar body using designs and shapes that truly make his guitars a playable work of art. With artists like Dave Navarro, Dick Dale, and Gene Simmons all playing a Minarek, you know the tone matches the talent. Visit Minarek Guitars online at Minarek Guitars, M-I-N-A-R-I-K, guitars.com.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
Well, you know, that's what heathens do, Karen.
Hey, you, the talented musician who any label would want if they knew where to find you, come here. We need to get you some serious label attention. So how is that label going to find you with no money and no hot contacts? I'll tell you how. Music Highway, the free online, in-the-know, independent music resource, where you log on and find free industry contacts, free bookings in great LA clubs, and best yet, free radio play on Music Highway Radio. Just log on music-highway.com. Music Highway, where you pave your own road to success.
Your period is a vital sign. If you are a woman under 40 and your period has stopped or is irregular, you may have a condition known as premature ovarian failure, or POF. Other symptoms of POF include infertility, hot flashes, and fatigue. If you have any of these symptoms or know someone who does, please visit our website for more information at www.pofsupport.org. Remember, your period is a vital sign.
Brought to you by the International Premature Ovarian Failure Association.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
Prince is sexy and also 5'2". That alone is a sheer sign of an act of God and that Armageddon is coming.
Red Lodge, the new album by award-winning artist Danielle Agnew. Red Lodge, nominated as Best Folk Recording at the 2008 NAMI Awards. Red Lodge, the new album by Danielle Agnew on Maurice the Fish Records. Available online at cdbaby.com and Danielle Agnew, EGNEW.com.
Back by popular demand, one of New York City's favorite rock bands, Joe Steele, brings their unique brand of heavy metal mayhem to the West Coast with the release of their new CD, Rock Hard or Die.
Rock Hard or Die!
To see where you can purchase Rock Hard or Die, or for upcoming tour dates, visit joesteelrocks.com. Remember to request Joe Steele Rock Hard or Die at your local music retail store. Rock Hard or Die at joesteelrocks.com.
Die!
discovering
Sheena Metal.
Listen to Mother Sheena. Whenever someone gives you money, it makes them just a little less irritating.
Hi, it's Renee Barnett. In our film Bloodline, we explored the controversial ideas behind the Da Vinci Code, a marriage between Jesus and Mary Magdalene, their holy bloodline, and a shadowy secret society called the Priory of Zion. Our search centered around the lush and beautiful Languedoc region of southwest France and the tiny, mysterious village of Rennes-le-Château. What is so special and powerful about this land? Is the treasure of the Knights Templar hidden there? And is this the place, as the locals say, where Jesus and Mary's children were raised? We hope you'll join the Bloodline team in May as we journey back once again to this place of history and mystery. For information on the Bloodline Mystery Tour 2011 or to order the Bloodline DVD, go to bloodlinethemovie.com. Merci. A bientôt.
Marino da Silva, one of the greatest guitarists of our time. Satisfaction from Voodoo Charm, the album, on iTunes now. Discover the magic at marinorocks.com. Welcome to his rock and roll universe.
I can't get no satisfaction.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
I'll tell you what drives me crazy is the face. That scary, weird, stretched, puffy, implanted face. Don't get a scary face like that. Do not wear a mask unless it's Halloween. And even then, if you scare a child and it dies, someone's going to sue you.
Johnny Harmonic.
This is Johnny Harmonic. We all love bright, shiny things. Johnny Harmonic, we all love bright, shiny things on iTunes from Golosio Publishing.
I'm glad that you don't know.
Scott Joss and Doug Colosio, two members of Merle Haggard's band, have released their first album called A Couple of Strangers.
Yeah, my voodoo woman's calling out to me.
Scott Joss and Doug Colosio on iTunes from Colosio Publishing.
So don't bother knocking, come on in, the party's rocking, I wonder if I do.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
She was easily 40, maybe 50, telling people she was 26 years old. And she didn't look 26. You know, she looked like the old lady that Jack Nicholson made out with in The Shining in the bathtub.
Hi, friend. This is Renee Barnett for Night Vision Radio. In my work in television and film production, we use night vision photography to illuminate what's hidden in the dark. And that's what we try to do at Night Vision Radio. We shine a light on the secret, the strange, and the unusual. On NVR, you'll hear from the experts and the experiencers who'll help us understand and expose these strange and sometimes dark subjects. Please join me right here Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Pacific Time for Night Vision Radio and check us out on nightvisionproductions.com. Real people, real stories, firsthand. Night Vision Radio.
Red Lodge. The new album by award-winning artist Danielle Agnew.
I know if I can just get away, I won't lose my mind.
Red Lodge, nominated as Best Folk Recording at the 2008 NAMI Awards. Red Lodge, the new album by Danielle Agnew on Maurice the Fish Records. Available online at cdbaby.com and Danielle Agnew, EGNEW.com.
You just found the home of irreverent, entertaining, and cool talk on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Sheena Metal Experience with your host, Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's the Sheena Metal Experience right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, latalkradio.com, sheenametalexperience.com. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show and to call and talk to us live. It's 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show, and also if you want to call on the air, the best way is to use that phone. And for those of you who are in the Los Angeles area, May 8th, 9th, and 10th, I'm directing and producing, and I'll also be in it, a charity production of The Vagina Monologues. Listeners of the Sheena Metal Experience know that many times as an actor, I have done The Vagina Monologues here and in New York City, and it's always a cool time. You know, you get together with all of these actresses from all walks of life and varying degrees of celebrity, and you hang out together, and everybody does a monologue, and it's on book, so there's not any of that, like, kind of terrifying, oh my God, what if I memorize it wrong and I screw it up? And some of the monologues are very funny, and some of the monologues are very serious, but all of the monologues are interesting. The show is fantastic. And it's always for a charity, which I think is a beautiful thing. And some of the proceeds go to V-Day, which is the charity that Eve Ensler, who wrote The Vagina Monologues, founded to end the violence against domestic violence against women in the world, which is, you know, that's a good cause, right? Nobody wants to beat women up for no reason. And then you pick your own charity for the majority of your proceeds to go to. And this year it is our charity is protect.org. My friend Allison Arngrim, who you know as Nellie Olson from the fantastic classic TV show Little House on the Prairie, that's her charity, and she sits on the board with them. And basically what Protect does is it goes and changes the child rape and molestation and incest rules right on the books. They work with you know, senators and people from the House of Representatives and kind of fix it where it's at, to make tougher sentences, to change the sentences. And I think that's a good cause because, you know, again, really, violence against other people, not so cool. So May 8th, 9th, and 10th, I have a fantastic cast. The website is vdayvalley.org. That's a V and then D-A-Y, Valley, V-A-L-L-E-Y, because it will be in Sherman Oaks where I live and hang out and roam around. And it's vdayvalley.com. You can see all the great girls that are in it. And almost all the girls that you see have been guests here on the Sheena Metal Experience, and the ones that haven't probably will be before the show, because I got some great friends of friends, and I had so many great actresses even that couldn't make it. I mean, I could have, every night we're using a different cast, so there's 60 some odd girls that are going to be between the three nights, and honestly, I could have cast it again, but I had so many fantastic friends and guests and great girls that have been on the show that, you know, are on location working or got a play or had to go out of town because they got a movie. So isn't that nice that when you lose a cast member, it's because they're working? So it's going to be a great time, and I think you're going to love it. And literally, I'm going to be jetting over there Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So Monday and Tuesday, I'll be bolting from here, being live on the air, and rushing right over there to go do the monologues. And the only person that you're going to see every night is me, because it's me. And also the wonderful Danielle Agnew, who is our resident psychic here and my co-host at Haunted Playground. And actually a lot of the girls from LA Talk Radio, the wonderful Mother Love is going to be here. Also Mary Kennedy from the Oh Mary Show, the fantastic Jillian Boyd from Atomic Dog Radio, and also Gina Yates from LA Gen X. So it's going to be a little bit of an LA Talk Radio experience. And I like that, too. So and just, you know, you wouldn't believe the array of women that I've had on this show. And boy, looking at them all, wow, that's it makes you really wonder where the time goes. But I've had over 700 guests. As a matter of fact, if you're checking the archives at LA Talk Radio or if you're on iTunes at the Sheena Metal Experience Hub and you see my interview two Fridays ago with Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie, she was my 700th guest. And then that's different people. That's not like, oh, somebody came three times. I mean, that's actual humans that have been here on the show with me. 700 humans. That's a lot of humans. How big of a space would you need to hold 700 humans? that's definitely something to think about. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to get my guest on the phone because he is stuck in traffic, and that's not a good thing, and we don't like that story. But occasionally, you know what? That happens here in the beautiful city of Angels. We get stuck on the phone. The phone is actually ringing. How hysterical is that? On the air. Yeah, we had to. That was not good. Hey, let's call somebody up on the phone. Anyway, please welcome to the Sheena Metal Experience my wonderful guest. He has done many things in the entertainment business in the stretch of his career, and an exciting new project launching in the fall, a brand new television network, the Anthus Channel, and we're going to be talking about that too. Please welcome to the Sheena Metal Experience the wonderful Charles Edelman. Hey, Charles, how close are you?
I am about 3 minutes away.
That's awesome. So we're doing it on the phone because I wanted to make sure that we got some good time with you to talk about it. While I've got you on the phone, start out by telling my listeners just a little bit of the history of you and how you wound up in this wacky business and kind of some of the stuff that you've done that has led you to the Anthus Channel.
Sure. Actually, ironically, most of the things I've done should have led me completely away from the Anthus Channel. But my background is in the entertainment industry. I grew up around L.A. I started as a child actor when I was about 10, 11, and really on the outskirts, a lot of just commercial work. But I knew at a very young age I wanted to be, you know, a director, producer. And so I went to USC, production program, graduated from there in 97. And then after that, really tried to find my way in Hollywood. You know, like everybody else coming out of these film schools, you think you're going to be the next, you know, Spielberg.
Sure.
And so it didn't quite work out that way. I had a lot of scripts. I had a great agent. And at the end of the day, I was just kind of meandering around town, regardless of how many people I met, how many pitch sessions with studios I was in. Hollywood is a big boys club, and it's a very close fraternity, and it's rare to puncture that if you don't have all the relationships. So about 10 years ago, I went off and started Anthem Digital and Anthem Pictures, which was really originally meant to be a DVD authoring company. We were making DVDs for, you know, all the independent studios in the industry. And as the years went on, I slowly started getting closer to production and distribution. And out of Anthem Digital was born Anthem Pictures, which really was primarily a distribution company for independent films. And so for the last, you know, last 10 years, I had that company. And through the process, I ended up finding that even that market was collapsing in on itself. The home video market with the DVDs and everything else, you just can't compete with the studios. It's very hard. It's impossible. So I really started looking at what I wanted to do, not only with my life, but with my, you know, my career. I knew I wanted to stay in producing and directing, but I saw myself more launching a studio or a network or something that could really touch people in a different way than the way I had been. And a few years ago, a good friend of ours who's also the head of programming for the network, her name is Karen Cohen. And Karen was the program director out of NBC New York for 9 years. And so Karen brought to me, this is about 5 years ago, she brought to me the concept of a health and wellness network. And, of course, I was at lunch, I heard it, and it didn't quite process. She kept talking about how this is for Dream. She wants to do a health and wellness network. And I, at the time, I realized that the market wasn't ready for it. I think we were at a very different point in society and our community that I don't think people really understood what that meant, or more importantly, were ready to accept that type of programming in their life.
I agree.
And to be honest, and the sad irony of it is that we had to go through a very, very hard time with both the economy, with us personally as people, and more importantly, you know, from a very grounded sentiment of what we want to do with our lives. You know, people are losing their houses, they've lost their jobs. The only thing we have left is our flesh and bones. And if we're not taking care of that and we're not truly connecting mind, body, and spirit, and I don't mean in a godly or, you know, other type of level, I'm talking us as human beings, how are we going to survive?
But don't you think that was kind of, Charles, that would have been the problem a few years ago, is that health and wellness networks were like Discovery Health. It was, here's the show about babies whose heads are connected, and now here's a show with a nutritionist, and here's a lady doing Pilates. But if you had tried to fuse anything spiritual into it, everybody would have freaked out, and that would have shut it down.
Absolutely. And because the health industry or the healthy industry has a stigma to it. It's become sort of like this alien abduction type stigma where people look at health and health food. I think I just passed your place.
Uh-oh.
Probably easier. People look at what we're doing in this market and what we're doing as a whole, and they look at the health industry as I did when I was really young. I used to look at, you know, really ultra healthy people as kind of nutty, you know,
right.
or very off the beaten path or too much hippie-ish. I don't know. There's always
right.
an excuse we find, let alone just looking at the excuse of why we're not taking care of ourselves. So I actually, to be honest, when I was 12, my best friend, his father is a kinesiologist, chiropractor, nutritionist, alternative healthcare guy. His name's Dr. Dan Schneider, and he's out of Ventura. And so from a very young age, I started, you know, from 12, I started really adopting a lot of their sentiment towards healthy living, towards lifestyle, towards all of these things that I never quite understood before. I didn't understand it from a core level of why I needed this in my life. And through my teenage years and my 20s, it became very self-evident, of course, why it's important. We need to live longer, healthier lives. And over the last 2 years, it became my purpose because I realized I love making programming. I love entertaining, but more importantly, I love informing people. I mean, the last film I directed in 2007 is called 213. And half the time when I'm not directing or producing, I was talking everybody on the set how a partially hydrogenated oil works and why they're so bad for your body, and gave it to them in very plain, very normal, you know, very scientific terms. And I think that's where the disjunction has been in the industry for so long, that you talk almost airy-fairy about the whole health industry and people shut down. But if you talk to them in scientific, very grounded, very positive sense, people will not only come aboard, they're going to come in droves and start using this as a lifestyle.
You know, and it's funny because the parallels, this show is a show that I pitched around when I was working for CBS in commercial radio. Probably pitched this show 10 times to Premiere, to Clear Channel, to Westwood One, to CBS, and everybody told me nobody cares what anybody thinks. Nobody cares about everyone's process. It's too intense. Yep. It's too emotional. It's too airy-fairy, and no one's going to listen to it. And then I would go back to the Stern affiliate and, you know, talk more about boobs. And I think maybe, like you said, it's just the world was not ready, because when I came here in 2009 and our wonderful station owner said, you know, if people are listening, I don't care what you're talking about. And then this has wound up being the most successful thing that I've ever done. But I think that like you said, Charles, in the last maybe 3 years, the amount that people have become acutely aware of their bodies, acutely aware of their emotionality, and especially acutely aware of their spirituality. I mean, you know, humankind has grown spiritually a lot in the last 5 years. Or not. Some people not, kind of almost going in the other way, but so many people growing that I think it's kind of opening up a whole new spectrum of what's acceptable for a television show or a documentary film or a radio show. People want to talk now about who am I and how do I tick and what's going to make me a happier, healthier person and what do I think about the universe and what's out there. And it's become so much less airy-fairy in the last couple of years.
I could not agree more.
You know, when
and
I was...
That's the paradigm shift. You know, people talk about trends. They talk about shifts in economies. They talk about everything. And now we are there. I mean, we've seen it happening. We've
right.
seen it in advertising media. Sorry, it's a little loud. I'm actually
awesome.
Walking in right now.
That's how you know it's live, people, where there's actually the Ventura Boulevard noise.
I go to the left of the building, I assume.
Yes.
So,
and now we'll hear you inside the elevator, which is like a whole kind of new auditory experience as well. But it's happened before.
Yeah, this is truly interactive TV. What floor are you on?
Exactly, two. Live, you know, live in Los Angeles is always, there's always a question next to it because you never know. I live four blocks away and sometimes I don't know if I'm going to get here because it's a crazy thing. So how big is the monumental task, Charles, of starting, a television channel? I mean, it just seems like just thinking about it and I'm tired.
Well, besides people wanting to commit me after this process, you kind of you kind of step back and ask that. That's a very good question. And I, to be honest, we've never looked at it as a monumental task. If you do that, you'll be, you know, you'll be disheveled and you'll never get anywhere at the end of the day. So what number are you to?
Yeah, just come down, come down the hall and then go to the left. And there we are.
You got it. So the thing is that when you set out to do something like this, or when I set out, or when we, the group, set out to do something like this, you have to look at it as sort of a whole, am I missing you?
You know, this is the most live experience that we have ever had. Walk down the long hall. There we go.
I'm coming in now.
And here you come. How fun. And you're literally walking right in the studio on the phone and now in the door. People, this is the livest radio that's ever been. And now sitting across from me. And there you are. And there's your mic. And we're rocking and rolling. How fun is that? Well, you know, just looking at your website, I have to say that you have one of the most gorgeous websites that I have ever seen, Charles. And just the amount of time that must have gone into making something that beautiful. I think people don't realize that that just putting television clips on a website and all that information, that's a lot of time consuming. That's you know.
It is. And actually, that's the precursor to where we're going with our social community. That the website, there's two websites, anthus.com and anthussocial.com.
Right.
And really, they're disjointed on purpose because we're trying to create a brand as our network, but we're also trying to capture the social community. So people really understand what we're about, both from a transparent business level,
right,
all the way over to a social community. We're working on a social community which will actually look nothing like what you see online right now. It's going to be an immersive, interactive, depth perceptive social community. So I know that sounds kind of odd.
No. It's fantastic because at the same time that you're showing cable companies and potential hosts what you have to offer creatively, you're also nurturing your listenership from the ground up so that by the time the channel launches in November, you're already going to have an amazing interactive listener base. So you're not throwing it out there cold.
Absolutely. And we've been very intelligent, more of a business intelligent design, not personally,
right,
as a company, because the types of partners we're looking at as advertisers are not your typical. We almost have a blacklist of advertisers for our network, which makes it harder. There's not going to be any fast food. You know, there's not going to be anything that's detrimental to the business communities, to social communities, to, environmental impacts.
Right.
You have to kind of, that's a lot of filtering.
Right. Nobody
but
works in a sweatshop.
You got it. And at the end of the day, you have to look at companies that are good, not only good organizations externally, but internally. How do they treat their employees? How do they treat their executives? How do they treat the world that they're building as a corporation? And what are they giving back to a social community globally?
Well, and isn't the truth, and I should probably shut up because I need sponsors too, but isn't the truth that a lot of companies that put on a very, look at us, we love the world front, 2% of our proceeds go to help ... then you look at what's really going on in the company and it's not good.
Absolutely.
So you really kind of have to do a lot of research of what actually is going on.
Well, the beautiful thing about this is if we start putting up advertisers and we start getting a massive, amount of, a million people come to us and say, this company did this and this and that, then, we're going to start looking at that. We have the audience as our filter at the end of the day as well. So if we're completely transparent as a company, which is so lacking in both the public markets and the private sector, we can really start to change the conversation about not only how you engage advertisers, but why you engage advertisers.
Right.
It becomes psycho and demographic for a company. We've always disjointed those two things where the consumers have their say, the company has their say, and then the middle format, the channel, the radio station, the print ad have their say. Well, if you kind of create an open conversation at the end of the day, you allow a whole new dynamic for the reason why we're being advertised to. And we're going to want that type of advertising because they're things we're going to want to buy. And not only that, is we're going to want to interact with these corporations and companies so that we can start to create co-mutual products that we're going to buy, they benefit, and they give back at the same time.
Right. And then also, and then from the ground up, because of your social networking, then, people are behind the products from the beginning, even before the channel launches and they see spots.
Absolutely.
Still, it's everybody believes in everything because, now that people are becoming very socially aware and very spiritually aware, sometimes I think people feel conflicted because here I'm watching my favorite TV show And I mean me, like universal me, Joe Human. And now I love this show, and it's such a spiritual show, and it's blowing my mind. And now here's a commercial for something where 13-year-olds work in a sweatshop in India, and I'm feeling conflicted. And the problem with how enlightened humans are getting is that you can't kind of sell them that I'm the girl in the cigarette box and cigarettes are good for you anymore.
Well, you've said it, and actually our you know, my partner and you know, the COO of the network is Doug Ridley. He actually uses that term a lot, talking about the old, you know, Flintstones ads, you know, the old commercials with, you know, cigarettes. They were 1950s ads for cigarettes.
It's good for you.
Yeah, exactly. If you actually have good companies with good cause and good purpose and great products that are actually something you want anyways, and they've been vetted, then advertising to you and making a profit off of products and entities in your life that will help you is a good thing.
Absolutely.
It's a good thing. I think this has been a big problem. It's always a talking point whenever we're talking about our network or our company. People always go, well, how can you profit off of doing well and doing good? It's, well, that's what profit should be. Profit should be made from corporations that do good, and by doing good, you do good business. It's a really simple equation. It's not complicated. It doesn't take a Harvard algorithm to figure these things out.
Right.
It's a very simple model. And corporations are running to this in droves right now on advertising.
But isn't that the myth that we're all sold, especially growing up as, you know, young creative people in the entertainment industry? If you're a nice person, you're going to lose. If you have integrity, forget about it. You might as well rip up your headshots. If you think you're going to make that movie that you care about, well, you're not. You're going to make 5 sleazy movies, and then you're going to take that money and make your documentary, and no one's going to care about it, because that's what we're sold over and over again. That whole myth that if you lose your edge of creepiness, you're done in this business.
You are so right. I've been through that. I've
Me
lived
too.
That. I think anybody who's in the industry has listened to this. You've brought up another very important term for us, which is the independent film and television industry. It doesn't exist. I mean, it exists right now, but anybody in that industry knows it's so disjointed. All the independent shingles at the studios have been shuttered. The industry is in chaos. The independent industry, both television and film. The only flourishing independent television industry is reality TV.
Yeah.
And not our type of reality TV, but the negative
Snooki.
No offense. Yes.
We won't
name names.
Right.
Absolutely. That's not our home.
Sure.
Our home is to give a new home to independent filmmakers, independent television, a way that they can voice who they are as people. From an entire level of who we are as humans, which is missing. We don't want to be the one-sided. You don't want to be like the liberals and the conservatives. We're actually none of the things of the above. We are actually the bridge that unifies alternative and modern, as well as spiritual and non-spiritual. And I mean spiritual in us as people, as energy beings, of everything we connect to each other.
Right. Not a fire and brimstone religious show.
No, absolutely not. If you want that, there's Trinity Broadcasting.
Yes!
There's a ton of networks to go. Go.
And they do it well.
And even with our news, we are very, very specific. Our news is only the good news. You know, we're doing
a deal with
the AP where we'll only get news feeds, you know, that are only positive. We'll do reinforcing stories around the world about, you know, companies, organizations, individuals, families that are changing their lives and the lives around them.
Yeah. You know, I call the nightly news things to scare the crap out of my elderly parents because they watch they watch the morning news and then they watch like 6 o'clock and then again at 11 o'clock. And there's always something on there. Today I was just talking to my mom and it was about how hawks have settled in Huntington Beach and they're going to come and they're going to swoop up your small dog, and my mom has a Maltese, and fly away with it. And, you know, and they, you know, they're old. They're 77 and 85. And even though they're smart, sharp, college-educated people, you know what? The news is scary. It tells you terrible things are happening everywhere. And we're buying into that. And then America's turning into a country of, oh, God, who even cares? It's all going to hell in a handbasket anyhow. Because all we're reinforced with is, if the gangs don't get you, then the toxic air is coming. Yeah. Then the wars, someone's going to invade us and terrorize us. And we're in this fear freeze. We're all like deer in the headlights.
Well, the last administration did their job. You know, and this administration is doing a bit of the same. So we have to kind of step back and look at, are we actually acknowledging the politics that are running our company, or are we just kind of have to let those go for right now, really rebuild ourselves from the inside out, which is what we're doing as a network. You know, we can't control everything. We don't want to control everything. We want to give the power back to the people globally about having faith and hope and you know, redemption in our our lives, about how we can change what we're doing on a daily level. And it scares people. It, you know, people who are, you know, on the other side of fear and doubt and loneliness. When I start talking about our network, you know, give it 10 minutes. From the other 10 minutes side of that conversation, they're converted. They yeah. want to be a part. They want that. Everybody wants it, whether yeah. they admit it or not. They want to feel good. They want to start their day energized. Yeah. And I don't mean a hokey, you're a good person, right. have a great morning day.
Right.
No, guys, no, no, no. I mean, real solid
real
scientific
stories.
Stuff, real
yeah.
stories about people who are actually know what they're doing, have changed, and found a way in their life to not only make their world better, but their sphere of influence better.
Right.
And that is a growing, you know, nexus right now. And not just in spirituality or causality or global oneness. We are moving towards there. And you've got the people, oh my God, not another hippie era. It's like, you guys understand that the thing about that generation and what they brought to us is personal empowerment. It's the soul consciousness of being one and being whole at the same time with everybody else.
Well, and don't you think that we're stuck now between these polar opposites of the fire and brimstoners? Everything's rotten, we're all going to hell, and it's all going to end in a big Mayan Armageddon anyhow. And then the almost glazed over psychotic new agers who are like, oh, my leg fell off, that's okay, namaste.
Yes.
And there's nobody in the middle, really. The ones that are stuck in the middle, like we are, who are really want to participate and live their lives every day. Now, some of me wants to lay on a yoga mat, and some of me wants to acknowledge that earthquakes and bad things do happen and have a balance again. Nobody has any balance.
Absolutely.
Everyone's brainwashed one way or the other. And I'm like, where do I even belong? I don't even know. And now in the last 2 years since I've been doing the show, I found like a tribe of people, and we're all kind of stuck in the middle, like the people stuck in the parking garage in the Irwin Allen earthquake movie. Like, where do we go? Who's like us? And that's what I like about Anthus, because you understand that, yes, it's going to be empowering, but it's also going to be real. And it's going to be science, and it's going to be current events, and it's going to be how to really live your life as a normal human, not somebody who's stuck on one of these poles with the spinning glazed over eyes.
Sans the fantastic Irwin Allen title sequences, you know,
right.
Absolutely. And it's been the issue with a lot of people, is because people want to tend to attach things to religiosity. They want to attach things to moral values. They want to attach things, regardless of what they are, they put a precedence ahead of it, regardless of what that precedence is.
Right.
It's a preconceived notion, how we're raised, how we're taught, how what we believe. Well, if you stop for a moment and say, that is irrelevant, because we are humans. We're energetic beings. We are made of electromagnetic energy, holding a shell of water and
right.
skin and bones and muscles and sinew and all these things that make
right.
us up of what we are.
We're like two steps above a kid's science project.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean,
for some reason we work.
And we do work. And we are flawed in every way we could possibly be flawed. But to be true humans, to be true good people, we start acknowledging that, accepting that, and say to ourselves, bad things happen.
Yeah.
Bad things happen. It's
and you're a better person to overcome them.
Absolutely.
Mama always says hard times build character. And it's true. And to pretend none of that's happening is just as terrible as hiding in a pew somewhere pretending that none of that's happening.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm not to circle back around, but you brought
Please.
Up something in the beginning when I first came into the studio, not the phone call, with regarding corporations and how they say, oh, look at us doing this or look at us doing that. We've started to find good things in companies that they haven't even publicized. And that gives us an extra little nugget of, look, these guys are doing something good. You know, whether or not they advertise on us, we have a 3 or 4 hour live program block 5 days a week in the morning. And the third hour is called the Healthy Business Hour. And we truly focus. Wow, I am LA traffic.
Okay.
We focus on businesses and what they're doing in the world and how they're sharing things. But more importantly, you know, companies like Procter & Gamble, they've done some good things. Even
sure.
though they do have a bad history in other places, they're really trying to change that paradigm.
Right.
I mean, they were the first group in Katrina. You know, it's phenomenal with the Tides, Loads of Hope thing. People wanted to just be clean and feel good about themselves. When it took our government, what, three and a half days to get
yeah.
there? You've got a group down there that they didn't care about the publicity. They didn't see them coming all over the air going, look at us, look at us. They just did it because they knew that was the right thing to do.
Right. And you can't blame a company that's been around since the first part, you know, the middle of the 19th century for, oh, they, because nobody knew then.
Absolutely.
Even the dancing cigarette lady,
Absolutely.
We didn't know then.
Absolutely.
But now on our show that we know, now is when you need to change your behavior.
Absolutely. And creating not only a network, but a social community where everybody can come together.
That's awesome.
They can integrate, they can communicate, and more importantly, they can understand why and what these companies are doing from inside out. And so they can talk about the products, they can talk about what's on the shows, and they can talk about what's going on in their lives. And through a correlation database, we're able to find purpose in the communication we're having with each other. Instead of just Twittering each other, you know, at hash symbol, you know, so-and-so.
Right.
And I use it, you know, and I'm fairly
sure,
new to
too.
That world, but yeah. But it's almost a shorthand version of communication. We have things to say to each other. We know this. Facebook
right.
and Twitter wouldn't be as big as they are if we didn't want to communicate. We
right.
want to communicate as people. How do we take communication, make it as simple and streamlined as possible? I mean, first of all, take out the texting concept. Make it a drag and drop interface where people can actually communicate, talk,
right.
drag information from a TV show
sure.
live onto
post
the conversation.
Post for more than 140 characters.
You got it.
Yeah.
And not worry about the actual confines of the technology and worry about where we can go in the future, how we can communicate.
Right.
And that's going to evolve these social communities.
Well, but the beautiful thing about something like Twitter is that's a great place where somebody can, you know, throw out to their followers that they have posted on the social network.
Absolutely.
And go find out, you know, I just posted about this. More information here. And then people can go. To me, Twitter's almost like you're sending out little greeting cards.
Absolutely.
To however many thousands
and we
you
don't
have
want to compete with anybody. We
no,
are
that's
we are
great.
An aid and an addition to that entire social. We're actually more of the glue that will bring it all together.
But people, I know that people still want to talk because talk radio now has kind of come out of that slump. I mean, there was a time where I was worried that sort of format of no DJs, just music, and people just listening to their iPods and the satellite channels that were just no talking. For a while, it looked like maybe we were going to let it go. But then all of a sudden, now more talk radio stations popping up than ever. People want to talk.
Absolutely.
And people putting their thoughts on YouTube.
Absolutely.
And people, you know, people want to discuss things because, as you said at the beginning, now I'm going to go back around to what you said when you were still on the street. There is a paradigm shift. And people aren't quite sure what it's about. And people, you know, I was very fortunate that I was raised by somebody who became very metaphysical in the closet in the 50s. And even though she wasn't purposely pushing that on me, I was still picking up that whole ethic. So I was taught to ask questions. If you want to know about something, let's go get you a book on it. Let's watch a TV show and find out what this is. But a lot of people weren't. They were taught to don't ask, don't get outside of your box. And if it's not part of your immediate community, you don't even need to know about it anyhow, so why wonder? And now this internet has exposed people to all these things they didn't know about. And I think in a lot of ways, people's minds are blown.
Absolutely.
And it's so much information, and people are kind of having to sort of refigure out what it means to be a human being and aren't quite sure how to do it. Whereas I just kind of always left the hatch open and whatever wants to come in. Okay, something else new. Now we have Twitter. Now we're thinking about this. Now we're talking about space-time continuum. Okay, but not everybody was raised to be open like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've talked about privacy versus individualism versus open society.
Absolutely.
You know, we now have, and that is part of the paradigm shift, ironically. You know, we are always in this middle section of, well, do I want, and this breach with Sony this last week with Sony, the Sony PlayStation Network is like a 70 million plus person breach of personal data. That's massive. You know, yet, I mean, it's not Sony's fault. I mean, people hacked their system supposedly, as we're starting to find out. That scares people away because then they go, oh my God, I just trusted a social community or an online community. Well, we have to realize that, you know, these things are going to happen as we start to become more mature
sure.
in that space. And what we also have to find is that balance. How much personal information? At the end of the day, to be quite honest, advertisers don't really care about what your name is. They don't care about your home address. They don't care about your personal data. It's
no.
irrelevant to them. What they care about is your demo information. They
mm-hmm.
care about how you're communicating and why you would go purchase their products.
Right.
More importantly, how they can talk to you and you go to them.
Right. They care about your email address so they can send you something.
But if we become more intelligent with how we interact
I
with
agree.
Advertisers, they're not going to need email addresses. They're not going to need pop-ups and they're not going to need the text messaging because they will exist in this virtual space just as if you were driving by a billboard, just
yeah.
as if you were pulling up to a restaurant. We're going to change the dynamic. Instead of going to the WWWs, we're going to travel. And the data, by the time it takes the data to reach whoever we're going to, whether it be Anthosocial or another community, to get to us, in that travel zone is going to be our advertising.
Right.
Because we're going, and it's not going to be cheesy 2D screens. It's going to be 3D immersive interactive advertising. And that is what we're concentrating on.
Well, and you know, our mentality is changing. You know, now that people don't watch spots as much, they TiVo pass things, they DVR pass things. On demand comes with just one commercial instead of 5 minutes of it in the breaks. Now, a friend of mine is working on a web series that she's got up on YouTube, and she's trying to get sponsors. And a friend of hers that worked at NBC told her that the new thing is that they're setting up a studio at the networks, in each of the networks, just designed for product placement and, you know, this hour of the event sponsored by Kraft. We're going back to the old, because people have no longer have the attention span for commercials. But, wow, look at that. Kodak, I'm going to go online and buy a camera right now. And sponsors can get, you know, seriously, 5 minute instant gratification. Look at that coffee company that's all natural. I'm going to buy 3 pounds of that right now. It's amazing. I mean, growing up, you know, if we would never have seen that as kids. The idea is mind blowing that you could see a commercial for something and instantly buy it.
Absolutely. And we're collapsing that model. We're taking short form, long form, you know, direct response, as well as product placement, and really making it one model.
Yeah.
You know, and we're collapsing that model even further by taking our broadcast model, our web, our mobile, and our social community model, and making it all one pipe.
Awesome.
So that when an advertiser comes aboard and they advertise, they get product placement, they get the web, they get the uplinking, they get the hotspotting, they get the mobile links. So it's kind of a new port to where the studios have been fighting this, the networks have been fighting this, because their ad model is very different between the web and broadcast.
Right.
And they've really kept that separated on purpose. I get it. It's their ad mall. They also have about 1,000 times the overhead that we do. So we're able to be much more nimble in terms of maneuvering with the advertisers and the sponsors, giving them 1/20th the cost in advertising rates, while giving them, you know, 10 times more in terms of an upsell.
Right. But the networks also, their clock is ticking.
Absolutely.
The boat is sinking.
Absolutely.
And there are only so many years until your computer screen is your TV. And your everything you're checking out on the web is the same, whether it's designed originally for television or it's designed for the web. The gap is closing for radio and for television.
Well, I think
and
it's
for
closing.
Film.
I think it's closing even quicker and much farther than that. We're yeah, I don't know how much I could discuss with on air because we're in the middle of something, but we're working on this where you won't even have a TV. You won't even have a computer screen. And I'm talking in the next 5 to 7 years in terms of technologies that allow you to interact with your environment within the space itself, creating interactive virtual user interfaces like in this room around
Absolutely.
You. Yeah. So that's where we're going, is immersive social communities. And that's what we're building. And really the Anthos social community is the precursor to that. So over the next 3-4 months, prior to the network launch, you're going to start to see little bits of our very interesting social community coming to light. Right now, you know, we just have a beta we use Ning just to grab people, capture that market, and to give people an idea of who we are, dig into it, find out who we are. I mean, know the good and bad about us. We're not perfect. We've been through the ups and downs of the business industry and the personal industry like everybody else. This has not been an easy ride. It's actually been the hardest ride we have ever been on in our lives, but that's what makes it so real and rewarding.
Right. And I think that kind of technology, when it's put into effect, is going to open up physiologically and intellectually. Brains are going to grow. You know, the
Absolutely.
Big complaint has been that in the last 50 years, people have stopped thinking. Everything's become so easy. People have become less educated, more stuff pulled out of the schools. But now with the internet and with the next generation being so computer savvy and with people having to becoming to interact that way and to comprehend that technology and where it can take you intellectually, I think that brains are going to begin to grow again.
I agree. We again, talking about stigmas is, you know, especially with the George Orwell, you know, rendition of where the world was going, we're not there. You know, we are not 1984. We're actually the opposite of that. Yes, we do have a bit of a police state and stuff like that, but nowhere near where we thought Big Brother was going. And if we create technologies that are user technologies, not corporate technologies, things that people can use and control their lives, their environments, their homes, their UI, their everything, then we have a market driven by the consumers, which is driven right now, but truly driven. And corporations will make even more money because when people feel it's their decision to make a purchase, when people feel it's their decision to cross this threshold that we're talking about, this new, what I refer to as the event horizon, we're there, we're on it, we are on this massive, I mean, it we thought, you know, when we started this process 2 years ago, people thought we were crazy. You guys are going to do what? You're going to launch a network with 40 original shows? What? Why don't you just go buy content? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't we not? Why don't we just do something different? Do what feels right in our gut and in our hearts? Because at the end of the day, we've been fairly right about it, and the market has gone there in the last 2 years. The both the public stock market and the advertising market has started to shift into what we're creating as a network.
Right. Well, and why would you, if you were just buying content that people could see on other channels, what would even be the purpose of it all?
We have been told this by both investors, venture capital groups. Well, why don't you guys just buy a bunch of shows? First of all, our shows have to be shot from the ground up just because the way products are integrated, the type of programming we're putting out, it's very distinct. It is different. We're not doing Discovery. We're not doing NBC. Even though our quality will be the NBC and the Discovery type programming, it's going to have a more global perspective to it, and not such an introverted, oh my God, what about me? It's what about me? How can I take care of myself? And how can I understand what's happening in the rest of the world at the same time?
Well, and it's the difference between, say, in film, somebody's intern sifting through a million scripts, picking out one, and then giving it to a director they think is going to do well with it, and then giving it to the producers and figuring out how to make it a blockbuster, and somebody who in the independent film community is organically telling their own story.
Absolutely.
That they have written and directed and sometimes starred in themselves. It's that organic, auteurism of this is really people's stories. It's not a bunch of suits sitting around a table going, let's do a show about a fat lady and she gets liposuction.
I learned that. I had some pretty good scripts. I went around town, had great actors attached, but they were my scripts and they weren't as good as I thought they were. So what I did find, though, is that it does take a ton of money. Unless you've got a drama or a little independent sling blade, it's rare that those once a year or once every 2 years, but if you're talking thousands of movies come out, your odds have slimmed down so drastically. So I realized that you put enough money at a movie, it's going to look good. It may not be a good movie, but they put enough advertising and marketing, they break even. Right. I mean, there are the last two Bruckheimer movies haven't,
we've become hungry. Yeah, we all like giant robots that fall from the sky.
Absolutely,
but I do too. They go good with popcorn and a big screen. But I think that we've become very hungry, and I think Sundance has shown that.
Yes,
and all the independent film festivals, we've become hungry for stories, people's stories. Yeah, real stories, human condition stories. And I started falling in love with independent film, when I was in college, because I came from theater. And to me, it was so much more about the acting, the writing, the directing. It was like a play than it was about, and now I have two lines in front of a green screen, and now a UFO crashes into my head.
Absolutely.
And so I think that now that everything is so technical, and the video games, and all of this technology, and all of the blockbusters, and all of the hugeness, that now people are hungering for, I want to go to a little club and see a band live. I want to go to a little theater and see somebody's story. I want to go to a television network and watch shows that are about real people's experiences and not, something that's kind of fabricated, because we have all of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is our goal. I mean, at the end of the day, we're an independent company. We're a small group of people. I mean, my wife works with me 24/7.
Fantastic.
I mean, we're a family.
Right.
And we believe in what we're doing to the core. We've given up everything in our lives for this. We've put every dollar we've had back into our companies to build it, much like you have and everybody else.
As I have with this show. Absolutely.
You know what the passion is behind it. And if we fail, we put it back together and we do it a different way.
Absolutely.
We don't see that there's an end to this.
Yeah.
We have enough momentum, enough people, and more importantly, it's kind of interesting. If you look at what's happened with OWN, with Oprah Winfrey's network, here you have a woman who is extremely intelligent and extremely driven, yet you have a disjointed network, a network that was more like Lifetime with Oprah's face on it. Originally, when she's, from my understanding and the people we know, sort of in inside outside, they said that originally she was trying to do what we were doing with Anthos.
Right.
Really concentrate on human stories, on people. But, that's not what drives Oprah's show. It is, but it's the spectacle around that.
Yes,
and
is.
Her being the anchor. You can't have Oprah's face on 24/7. That'd be like Biography with Oprah's face on 24/7. It's just not going to work.
Right.
You have to find that balance. And hopefully they do. Because if they're successful or if they're not successful, it's a good sort of a good testing ground or litmus test for the types of independent networks.
Right.
Even though she's not an independent network. That's, partnered with Discovery Health. OWN took over Discovery Health. Discovery Health converted into the Oprah Winfrey Network.
Right.
So you're talking about a disjointed network, the Discovery Health, which had botched circumcision. I mean, I don't know if they had those, but that's the type of programming. And Oprah Winfrey. I get where they're going. I get the Dr. Oz's and all this type of stuff, but you need more. This network isn't the Charles Edelman Network. You know, it's a network for the people.
Your face isn't going to be on the magazine every month.
Oh God, no! Maybe we probably won't have a magazine unless an online subscription.
Do you know? I was listening. I was driving over here today to do my music show, which I do before this, and I heard a commercial for her show, and I don't know when the last time I did. She was interviewing Rob Lowe, and now I know Rob has a new book coming out because I cover a lot of the people that sign at the Barnes & Noble at the Grove, and I know he's going to be there. And definitely, he's a survivor from young actor to he's always had like 5 comebacks. So here's the commercial for her, and she's doing her Rob Lowe, like weird thing, absolutely, which I don't understand what that's about. She's a very educated woman and a broadcast journalist. I don't really get why we're yelling like P.T. Barnum, come see the two-headed baby. And then the 3 questions that they put in the commercial were, when did you know the girl was 16? What do you think about Charlie Sheen? And then Oprah's like, I watched the sex video. And I thought, that's the summation of that interview. That's all been on TMZ.
Yeah.
We've read that throughout the years in every scandal rag. That's the cover of the Star. I would expect from Oprah, who's one of the best journalists,
absolutely,
in the world,
absolutely,
something a little more about the in-depth nature of Rob Lowe, and not what do you think of Charlie Sheen, and when did you know the girl was underage?
Advertisers drive market, and market
wow.
is driven by the pop news culture that is going on, and we're with this transitional period, as we'll call the next, I call the next 3 to 5 years, we are going to see a massive shift both in technology. I mean, you guys look at your mobile phones right now. We've just begun.
Yeah.
We have just begun. The iPhone is fantastic, but we are just on the precipice of another massive technology shift.
Right.
With that is a weaning process. Getting people off the teat of this type of media, off the TMZ media, because it's like a drug. People feed off that negativity and it drives their market, it drives their life. And once you start to separate them,
absolutely,
you can start to grow that market, the new market.
Yeah, it's a kind of a weird time, right? It's like when you have growing pains. In a way, some people are very stubbornly fighting not only the shift in paradigm technologically, but spiritually.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because I've always said for a very long time, and I say it on the show all the time, that someday humans will be evolved enough to realize that spirituality and science are 2 sides of the same coin. And now here we are in this amazing age of enlightenment, not only for spirituality, but also for technology. And the 2 of them are kind of drag racing through the universe together, about to collide into each other. And when they do, people are going to freak out.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is going to be such a mind blower for people who have kept their religion and their technology very separate.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it's going to be nice to see, new technologies and new devices that will be able to scan body, body energy frequencies and stuff like that,
absolutely,
which are what we're made of. And we've become so, you don't see a lot of science and money put behind that. I mean, that is something we're getting into as well, is to really understand us humans at the core level of what we're made up, from the molecular level, the DNA level, all the way up to this, the level of how our brain functions and our body.
Or realize, hey, guess what? Your car really does have a little spirit. Your house does have a spirit. You know
absolutely.
What I mean? There is energy,
energy
in your violin.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Well, all the things that everybody's thought we were the airy fairy weirdos.
When I produced Ghost Encounters with Peter James in 2004, the one thing, and I started the documentary with this, energy cannot be created or destroyed.
Right.
It only changes form. This is science fact. It's every scientist will agree on this. Pretty much every human will agree on this. Well, when it changes form, where does it go? What does it do?
Yeah.
Does it become part of the force, around you? Does it become part of the walls, the trees, your glasses, your hair? Does it lift off into space? We don't know. So the question is when we start understanding and being able to track that, will we really understand who we are as humans?
Right. And you shot that on the Queen Mary, and that's a typical example. That ship has a spirit.
Absolutely.
When you stay on that ship,
absolutely,
you feel like you're staying in her house.
Absolutely.
And you feel like she's there in your cabin. And that was even a mind-blowing thing for me, and I'm Irish and airy-fairy as hell. But that was a mind-blower. So I can't believe that we have powered through this time. Fantastic. Where can people find out more about you and about the Anthus channel?
Absolutely. You can go to anthus.com, anthus.com, or if you'd like to join our social community, you can go to anthussocial.com. www.thedamned.com. And you can find all the information about us and myself and our company, and come join.
Will you come back and see me again so we can talk some more?
I would love nothing more.
I would absolutely love that. Everybody, the wonderful Charles Edelman and the Anthus channel is his channel. And if you miss any of the links for how to get there, just go to SheenaMetalExperience.com or LATalkRadio.com, and I'll gladly forward them over to you. It's the Sheena Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. Quick break, and we're right back with much more radio fun.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
Continue to consider the source. Elizabeth has the voice of an angel and the looks of a movie star. She's performed everywhere from Carnegie Hall to the Knitting Factory in Hollywood. This critically acclaimed singer-songwriter reveals it all.
Passion
in her authentic and powerful CD,
Breathe In,
now available on Desert Sunrise Records. See, hear, and buy Brittany Elizabeth at BrittneyElizabeth.com.
Passion to create the finest quality instrument available anywhere. That's what Minaret Guitars is all about. With his patented tone chamber engineering, Mark Minaret revolutionized the sound of the guitar and bass. He transformed the ordinary guitar body using designs and shapes that truly make his guitars a playable work of art. With artists like Dave Navarro, Dick Dale, and Gene Simmons all playing a Minaret, you know the tone matches the talent. Visit Minaret Guitars online at Minaret Guitars, M-I-N-A-R-I-K, guitars.com.
Hey guys, Danielle Agnew here. You know, we talk a lot about psychic phenomena on this show, especially being as that, well, you know, I'm a psychic. But let me tell you guys, there's a lot of people out there who claim to be psychic, and they're not. I invite each and every one of you to head over to my personal website, www.danielleagnew-advisor.com. Before seeking spiritual counsel from anyone, make sure you do your homework. Remember, a psychic is only as good as their intention.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
She was easily 40, maybe 50, telling people she was 26 years old. And she didn't look 26. You know, she looked like the old lady that Jack Nicholson made out with in The Shining in the bathtub.
Your period is a vital sign. If you are a woman under 40 and your period has stopped or is irregular, you may have a condition known as premature ovarian failure, or POF. Other symptoms of POF include infertility, hot flashes, and fatigue. If you have any of these symptoms or know someone who does, please visit our website for more information at www.pofsupport.org. Remember, your period is a vital sign.
Brought to you by the International Premature Ovarian Failure Association.
Hey, you, the talented musician who any label would want if they knew where to find you, come here. We need to get you some serious label attention. So how is that label going to find you with no money and no hot contacts? I'll tell you how. Music Highway, the free online, in-the-know, independent music resource, where you log on and find free industry contacts, free bookings in great LA clubs, and best yet, free radio play on Music Highway Radio. Just log on music-highway.com. Music Highway, where you pave your own road to success.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
Prince is sexy and also 5'2". That alone is a sheer sign of an act of God and that Armageddon is coming.
Hey guys, Danielle Agnew here. You know, we talk a lot about psychic phenomena on this show, especially being as that, well, you know, I'm a psychic. But let me tell you guys, there's a lot of people out there who claim to be psychic, and they're not. I invite each and every one of you to head over to my personal website, www.danielleagnew-advisor.com. Before seeking spiritual counsel from anyone, make sure you do your homework. Remember, a psychic is only as good as their intention.
Marino da Silva, one of the greatest guitarists of our time. Satisfaction from Voodoo Charm, the album, on iTunes now. Discover the magic at marinorocks.com. Welcome to his rock and roll universe.
I can't get no satisfaction.
I'm glad that you don't know.
Scott Joss and Doug Colosio, two members of Merle Haggard's band, have released their first album called A Couple of Strangers.
Yeah.
Yeah, my voodoo woman's calling out to me.
Scott Joss and Doug Colosio on iTunes from Colosio Publishing.
So don't bother knocking, come on in, the party's rocking. I wonder if I do.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
Listen to Mother Sheena. Whenever someone gives you money, it makes them just a little less irritating.
Back by popular demand, one of New York City's favorite rock bands, Joe Steele, brings their unique brand of heavy metal mayhem to the West Coast with the release of their new CD, Rock Hard or Die.
Rock Hard or Die!
To see where you can purchase Rock Hard or Die, or for upcoming tour dates, visit JoeSteeleRocks.com. Remember to request Joe Steele Rock Hard or Die at your local music retail store. Rock Hard or Die at JoeSteeleRocks.com.
Johnny Harmonic.
This is Johnny Harmonic. The album is We All Love Bright Shiny Things. Johnny Harmonic, We All Love Bright Shiny Things on iTunes from Colosio Publishing.
If you're fed up with lame, uninspired talk radio, tune in to LA Talk Radio for reverent, entertaining, and cool talk. You're listening to The Sheena Metal Experience with your host, Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
That's right. It's the Sheena Metal Experience right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, latalkradio.com, sheenametalexperience.com. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show and to call and talk to us live, 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. My next guest is also making his debut here on the Sheena Metal Experience. He's been a part of many musical projects, including one of my favorites, The Motels. He's in a brand new band called Dance Hall Pimps, and we're going to be playing some music from their new CD today. Please welcome to the Sheena Metal Experience guitarist Jeff Gerard. Jeff, it's so great to have you here. Thanks for being on the show with me.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So let's start out, because it's your first time on the show. Tell me a little bit about how you started as a musician and when you knew you wanted to make this wacky business something you did with the rest of your life. Because it's kind of an acquired taste, right, Jeff? It's not a lifestyle for everybody.
No, if you knew what you were getting into, you'd never do it.
So when you started, Jeff, what did you think you were getting into?
I thought that I'm getting a weird echo, so if I talk funny, it's because I'm hearing myself twice. I basically thought in third or fourth grade that if the girls screamed while I play guitar at show and tell, maybe I should do that again.
Nice. I'm surprised, actually, how many times I have heard that it's about the girls. Two things I hear the most from all the artists that I've interviewed, music artists on this show. I saw the Beatles, and I did it for the girls.
Yeah. I think to a man, we're all like socially inept and shoegazers, and you know, this is our ticket out.
And were you like that? Were you a shy kid? And what made you not so shy was having the guitar to play?
It didn't make me not shy, but for the 5 minutes I had it on, I was King God.
That's awesome. And then, you know, how old were you when you started playing, and where did it kind of go?
No, I know this story. It was my dad's guitar. I was 9 years old. He was always playing. So one day I went, let me see that thing. And I clinked on it and made a couple of noises. And he came in the room and said, what are you doing? I said, listen to this. And it was like, bow, 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 bow. And he said, oh, that's great. Keep going. So I did. And Peter Gunn, I'd heard it on the radio. And I don't know, somehow I worked out the four notes. And took it to show and tell in, I think it was third grade, really. And that's when I got that magic reaction that made me go, hey.
Right. And it is magic, because I played guitar when I was a kid. And even though I was a small fat girl with a bowl haircut, still when the guitar came out, even if you were just playing like Puff the Magic Dragon, kids were riveted.
Yeah, the guitar was like a magic wand. All you had to do was hold it, you know?
Right, just that people knew that you did it was fascinating. It was like if you were the first kid in school that had the really great car. You people were just riveted.
Yeah.
So,
exactly. Yeah.
You know what I'm going to do? Because I know you've got an echo. Why don't you call me back and we'll make the connection better?
Okay, give me the number.
Okay, it's 818-602-4929.
602,
4929.
Call you right back.
Okay. So Jeff's going to call back, and in the meantime, we're going to play some Dance Hall Pimps, because I would love to do that, and I think that would be a lot of fun. So let's get that loaded up. If he calls me first, then we'll do it later, but if he doesn't call me back right away, then we'll do it now, because it's live radio, and this is how we do things. You know, when I first started doing live radio, it totally mortified me to do things like that, but now I actually think it's kind of funny. Oh, and he's back. So... I hope this is him. It's a different number. Are you back with me, Jeff?
Sheena Bia.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. When I saw the different number, I thought, am I going to introduce you? And then it's going to be like, you know, Peter from Pacoima calling for Jeff.
Is this the 7-Eleven you guys are in my spot?
Is this Domino's Pizza? So Jeff, then how old were you when you really realized that you were interested in doing this professionally? And what, you know, what was kind of the road that took you to that place?
Oh, sure. I was in England for a year. My dad took some kind of a government program that was trading college professors, one of theirs for one of ours kind of thing.
Right.
And so we lived in London for a year. And by dumb luck, it just happened to be the screaming peak of swinging London. And I wasn't even sure where England was when we took off to get there. You know, I didn't know if they knew what... rock and roll was, you know, I didn't know if I was going to some backward country. Well, you know, we got there and it was just going insane. And every afternoon after school on TV, you're seeing these bands that are just killing me. And everything was new. It was like a new way of dressing, a new sound. Kids weren't trying to look old anymore like they used to. They were trying to look younger than ever. Seems kind of ridiculous now, but this was a long time ago. And, it so happened that another family that was friends of ours did the same program, and they were a few miles down the road, and we would get together once in a while, like once a month, and his name was Tom Webb, and it was obvious to both of us the minute we got back to the States, we were immediately starting a band, no questions asked. And that's exactly what we did. We came back about a month apart, you know, in the summer. And as soon as our feet hit ground, it was like, okay, when are we going to start rehearsing? Because, you know, we've seen all this stuff on TV. There was nothing like it at home, and we couldn't wait. And so that was really it. I was 14 or 15.
Wow. And was it easy? I mean, was it something that came very easy to you, being in a band, booking the gigs, playing a scene, writing the songs? I mean, did it all? Because sometimes it's almost sort of like a clandestine thing where everything just kind of falls together.
Well, I don't know if it was hard or not. We had no clue what we were doing. And at that time, it was all covers anyway. Nobody wrote their stuff.
Right.
We heard about it. But, you know, we wanted to do those songs we just heard, we just saw. And so the thing is, in Gainesville, Florida, which is a whole story unto itself, there's this, at that time, there was this incredible combination of, all these kids at about the right age. It's a college town anyway, and it hadn't been so long since the university had remodeled the campus, and they collected all the fraternities and put them on one street, way down by the swamp where they wouldn't cause any trouble. And as a consequence, there were like 30 or 40 fraternity gigs per weekend as a result. And
wow.
If you got one of those gigs, you could run up and down the street and see other bands that you would never see otherwise. Plus, there were a lot of bars and taverns. So between those two things, there were plenty of places to play. And you got to watch how other bands were doing it. And if anybody had a sharp idea that seemed to work, it was stolen immediately because everybody was watching everybody else.
Well, and you know what? It was. I know what that's like because I grew up, you know, in high school when the 80s was late 80s was so happening on the Sunset Strip. And there's something very exciting about growing up around a thriving scene because everything is about the music. I mean, you couldn't get near Hollywood without, there were thousands of people just standing on the sidewalks, just communicating together. And I'm in this band. Okay, I'm in this band. And that's a very exciting thing. And if you're lucky enough to be, you know, like in a Seattle in the 90s or in an Athens, Georgia in the mid 80s, when something is really thriving like that, it's awesome.
Yeah, you got it. That's what was happening. Certain places just seem to like come together where the energy is there and styles come together in art, music, fashion, lifestyle. It all just seems to come together into a single point, and it's really exciting. But yeah, you're right. Different towns do it at different times. They have their day in the sun. Gainesville had its day in the sun for about 10 years, and it produced a lot of talent, you know, Tom Petty and I'm drawing a blank. Eagles. I know this guy. Give me a second.
Don Henley? Joe Walsh?
No.
Gunfry?
Well, come to me later, doesn't it? It's, we're having dead air here. We'll come back.
Yeah, I like that you picked that up. That was awesome. You know, and we were lucky that you saw that, you know, in England a little bit. So you got to see what a thriving scene was like and kind of fall in love with that energy.
Yeah, I was right at the age where I was, like, starting to chomp at the bit and not wanting to stay at home and be a good little boy anymore. And it made it really clear there was plenty of exciting stuff to do out there.
And then when did you realize that, wow, I need to take it someplace else? Because there's a time, right, where you hit the glass ceiling in your scene, and then it becomes the L.A., New York, Nashville choice.
Yeah. Well, the band I was in was called RGF, and we pretty much got to just about own Gainesville for about 10 minutes there. And there was nothing left to do. We were just repeating, playing the same thing. It wasn't getting any bigger or any better. So, yeah, we bought a school bus from the county, converted it and lived in this thing and decided to head to a big city, and it was going to be either Atlanta or New York. And we decided Atlanta was a little too much to south, and New York, it turns out we were kind of intimidated by New York. We didn't want to go there. We were sort of, I don't know. So we picked plan B, which was Boston. We got up to Boston and we ended up we went off so half-cocked, it was ridiculous. We didn't have a clue what we were doing. We just, like, crossed our fingers and hit the road. And that's not the way to do it, and I'm living proof. We ended up parking the school bus in an abandoned gas station in Cambridge, and we lived there for about 3 weeks. And by some crazy hookup, we ended up playing these free gigs at Boston University at BU, lunchtime freebies with another local band that was trying to make it big, Aerosmith.
Wow.
And, they were like almost a Stones cover band at the time. And but about the same age as us and same kind of hope, only they were living in their hometown. And we had some opportunities presented to us, and we went, I don't think we want to play a club. Let's go up to Vermont and play at this hippie festival. Big mistake, because it was a total disaster and everything went wrong, and there was a hard freeze that night, and you know. And we got dispirited, and we had two singers in the band, and unbeknownst to us, they were making secret deals behind their back, and they decided to leave the band and go join a Grade Z touring version of Jesus Christ Superstar. So they left us in the lurch up there, and we couldn't replace them, and we kind of wandered around a bit, and kind of went, I don't know, I guess we have to go home with our tail between our legs, you know, because we made a big deal about leaving. And so we just sort of snuck back, didn't really tell anybody we were back, and I quit for a while and made waterbeds because it was just too embarrassing. What happened was around Thanksgiving that year, I got a phone call from a guy I had met in Boston. He said, I saw your guys at BU, you know, and I forget how he got my number. I've got this thing out here in Hollywood, and it's all ready to go. It's in the can. It's, you know, it's in the bag. We just need a great guitar player, and you're the first guy I thought of. Well, keep talking, you know.
That's awesome.
Now you have my attention. And, of course, I only half believed it, you know, like, sounds like one of those stories, and, of course, it was. But what I decided was, you know, it's an excuse of getting me out of this town. So I hopped on a plane and came out to Hollywood and did a couple of demos, and it all fell apart. And then I just stayed. And interestingly enough, about a year or two later, the whole Petty crew came out, which was kind of weird, because when I came to L.A., I'd never heard of anybody coming here. They go to San Francisco, you know, and they go to New York, but I never heard of anybody going to L.A. There was basically nothing here, at least that we knew about. So when the Tom Petty and Mudcrutch and all those guys came out, it was kind of like, huh, maybe I cleared the way, or they figured I didn't die, so they'd try it too. So Mudcrutch did an album and broke up, and the keyboard player, Ben Mott, was doing some demos, and he basically just called everybody he had their phone number for that was from home, because, you know, it's easy to work with hometown guys. And we all came down and did his demos, and they were going really well. And he showed them to Tom. And Tom, you know, perked up his ears, because he'd been using top-flight session guys, but they just weren't getting the inexplicable vibe that he couldn't articulate of what he wanted. And since we were all from home, it was just unspoken. We kind of knew. It came natural. And so he started using that same lineup for his songwriting, for his solo album. And one thing led to another, and a lot of phone calls, and we pretty much convinced each other, you know, we have a lot more on the ball here than just Petty's solo record. I think we have a band. And he didn't want to do it. He's sick of bands. You know, the whole Mudcrutch thing was a big letdown, and he didn't want to do it. But the record company president, Danny Cordell, he encouraged him to take it seriously. So he did, and we had a band for a while, and I was actually in that band for about a year. And it was kind of loose-knit. You know, I was in the band, but there were also other people kind of drifting in and out. So when it came time to actually go on the road, they pared down to fighting weight, and I got the boot.
So you were almost nearly a heartbreaker.
In more ways than one, yeah. Oh, I took it really hard. These are my buddies. I mean, everybody that I would have started a band with was in that band, and they were all spoken for. So that was kind of, you know, that was the end of the line for me. So,
well, you know, isn't that funny? I was just talking to a guest about this a couple of days ago. You know, now when a letdown happens, you think, you know, whatever, this business. But when you're, you know, in your teens and your early 20s, and every loss is devastating, whether it's bandmates leaving or it's record companies dropping you. I mean, it's all the end of the world.
Oh, yeah. It's being dumped by a girlfriend.
I'm never going to recover. I'm never going to be in another band. I'm never going to get another deal. And eventually you always do. But there's that panic of, you know, oh my God, how do I get it back?
Yeah, I got really angry and decided to do an end run. And so I kept my ears open for what the next big thing might be, and the sort of new wave of punk was happening. I go,
sure.
I'll jump on that bandwagon and they'll be left behind. Ha, ha, ha.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was the new coming up thing that they were playing it on K-Rock. That was just about the time that I moved out here from the East Coast, and I had never heard New Wave. I didn't know what any of that was because, you know, in the East Coast, it was a lot of like Zeppelin and Aerosmith and Yes and Queen. And then I came out, there was no K-Rock, so people weren't getting exposed to that kind of stuff.
Right. It was a whole new thing. And all that music was wiping the slate clean and pushing those people aside. Anyway, so that led to the Motels, and the Motels was the whole thing, and made that album. And
that was huge.
Yeah, it went pretty good. Still very popular in Australia. You know, it's like a very, very well-known name in Australia, more so than here. You know, so here they kind of go, oh, yeah, I remember them. But in Australia, they're spoken of in the same breath as the Cars and Blondie. And
they should be. I mean, I agree. I remember growing up in that time and how important those songs were. And every bit as important as Blondie and every bit as important as the Cars.
Yeah. Well, which brings us full circle. Now I'm back on the horse, signed to Lakeshore Records. Pretty cool.
It's awesome.
And here I am in the Dancehall Pimps. That's another funny thing. You know, I was basically in what I would call retirement. I wasn't really trying anymore. And I was playing for fun and jamming with friends and going to blues open night and whatever, you know. And through my girlfriend, I met RJ. RJ asked me to, when he found out I was a guitar player, he asked me to back him up on two songs for a talent show at a, it was sort of a private cabaret kind of place. I don't know how far we can get into this right here, but it was
sure.
A pretty interesting venue.
You can say anything you want. I've played at so many topless bars and full nude bars, it's not even funny.
Yeah, well, anyway, it was a private club for people of a certain focus.
Nice.
Let's just leave it at that. And we just did two songs, him and me alone, and it went over great, so they asked us back. So we added Vic on drums, playing one drum. That went over good. So next time we added Eddie on bass, and it kept growing like that. And after about five of these, we went, you know, why don't we play something out in public? So our first gig was at Bar Sinister for
great.
The public, anyway.
It's always busy. It's always Bar Sinister's
yeah.
always packed. And for those of you
tremendous.
That aren't in the L.A. area, Bar Sinister's like the biggest goth club in Southern California.
Yeah, it went great. And actually, there's some footage, there's some video clips that you can find on dancehallpimps.com that are, I'm pretty sure, were taken from that debut gig. They're not bad.
Well, and plus, a lot of people there do absinthe, and I think that you can't do a bad show when your audience is on absinthe.
That stuff is, oh, God, that stuff is vile.
But it makes you so, everybody's so happy that, you know what, honestly, you could sit up there and play the spoons and you would get applause.
Yeah, you get pretty drifty on that stuff. I mean, if you remember your first hit of Jägermeister and how, you know, imagine taking Jägermeister as ground zero and going Jägermeister on top of that, that's absent.
Yeah, it's really kind of the place that lives between Jägermeister and heroin.
yeah, you got it. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Green Lady.
So let's play something from the album. What is the album called, Jeff?
Well, I think it's just going to be called The Dance Hall Pimps, although we are toying with Shadows Cafe Dark Angel.
Oh, I like those both. What did you want kind of the vibe of the album to be? I mean, it's the first album for this band, so I think sometimes you're almost sort of establishing your musical brand when you put your first album out.
Yeah, well, we're so eclectic, it's hard to really put your finger on it, but it's kind of dark and sarcastic a little bit. Actually, you know the Edward Hopper painting, Nighthawk?
Uh-huh.
I think it's kind of like that.
And what's yeah. What's the single from the album? What should I play first?
Oh, gosh. How about...
I have I'm No Prince Charming, I have Best for Love, and I have Mommy Was a Zombie.
Let's start with I'm sorry. What was the first one?
I'm No Prince Charming. Should we start with that?
Yeah, do Prince Charming. That's an easy listen.
Let's do that. My guest all this hour, the wonderful Jeff Gerard. The band is Dance Hall Pimps. This is from their new album, and it's called I'm No Prince Charming. It's the Sheena Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. Let's break for some great music, and we'll be right back.
I don't see damsels in distress. You don't want a knight, no, but not that easy to impress. I don't ride the stallion, and you don't wish it wells. I ride the 67 iron head, and always missing tail. Cause I'm no Prince Charming, baby, no Snow White. I'm just wishing for the one I love, but only for the night.
us, they taste just fine. I'll be your poison apple, baby, baby, you'll be mine. Your mama read your fairy tales, you never bought the hype.
You always love the villain, and babe, I'm just your type, cause I'm no Prince Charming, and babe, you're no Snow White. I'm just wishing for the one I love, but only for the night,
covering
Sheena Metal.
You know that really, really tight baby doll t-shirt you're wearing? Needs a bra.
Why do I take comfort and misery? Put on a
she may be young and beautiful, but life can suck even for her. You've been in love, right? Critically acclaimed singer-songwriter Brittany Elizabeth reveals it all in her authentic and powerful CD, Breathe In, now available on Desert Sunrise Records. See, hear, and buy Brittany Elizabeth at BrittanyElizabeth.com.
Minarik Guitars, made for artists who refuse to compromise. The Minarik Lotus,
awarded the Gold Award by World Magazine.
The Minarik Inferno,
awarded the Editor's Pick by Guitar Magazine.
The Minarik Studio Extreme Series guitars play as well as the Super Custom Series.
Minarik guitars are played by Lemmy and Phil, as well as of Coheed and Cambria.
Go to MinarikGuitars.com to check out these guitars and the stars who use them.
MinarikGuitars.com.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
Well, you know, that's what heathens do, Karen.
Hey,
Hey, you, the talented musician who any label would want if they knew where to find you, come here. We need to get you some serious label attention. So how is that label going to find you with no money and no hot contacts? I'll tell you how. Music Highway, the free online, in-the-know, independent music resource, where you log on and find free industry contacts, free bookings in great LA clubs, and best yet, free radio play on Music Highway Radio. Just log on music-highway.com. Music Highway, where you pave your own road to success.
Your period is a vital sign. If you are a woman under 40 and your period has stopped or is irregular, you may have a condition known as premature ovarian failure, or POF. Other symptoms of POF include infertility, hot flashes, and fatigue. If you have any of these symptoms or know someone who does, please visit our website for more information at www.pofsupport.org. Remember, your period is a vital sign.
Brought to you by the International Premature Ovarian Failure Association.
Discovering Sheena Metal.
It's like if you had a beautiful, shiny gold nugget and you pushed it into the middle of a pile of poop and then tried to sell it to people.
Back by popular demand, one of New York City's favorite rock bands, Joe Steele, brings their unique brand of heavy metal mayhem to the West Coast with the release of their new CD, Rock Hard or Die.
Rock Hard or Die!
To see where you can purchase Rock Hard or Die, or for upcoming tour dates, visit JoeSteeleRocks.com. Remember to request Joe Steele Rock Hard or Die at your local music retail store. Rock Hard or Die at JoeSteeleRocks.com.
Hi, it's Renee Barnett. In our film Bloodline, we explored the controversial ideas behind the Da Vinci Code, a marriage between Jesus and Mary Magdalene, their holy bloodline, and a shadowy secret society called the Priory of Zion. Our search centered around the lush and beautiful Languedoc region of southwest France and the tiny, mysterious village of Rennes-le-Château. What is so special and powerful about this land? Is the treasure of the Knights Templar hidden there? And is this the place, as the locals say, where Jesus and Mary's children were raised? We hope you'll join the Bloodline team in May as we journey back once again to this place of history and mystery. For information on the Bloodline Mystery Tour 2011 or to order the Bloodline DVD, go to bloodlinethemovie.com. Merci. A bientôt.
Marino Da Silva, one of the greatest guitarists of our time. Satisfaction from Voodoo Charm, the album, on iTunes now. Discover the magic at marinorocks.com. Welcome to his rock and roll universe.
I can't get no satisfaction.
Discovering
Sheena Metal.
I'll tell you what drives me crazy is the face. That scary, weird, stretched, puffy, implanted face. Don't get a scary face like that. Do not wear a mask unless it's Halloween. And even then, if you scare a child and it dies, someone's going to sue you.
You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to The Sheena Metal Experience with your host, Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Start that way.
Well, don't play it safe in the night. She want a man like Mr. Hyde. Don't quite treat her right. She wants a beast for love.
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 She wants a beast for love. Some girls are just drawn that way. Oh, better than Casanova. Better than Don Juan too. Dracula's in love with Betty. Put a spell on you. Sporting a black tuxedo. Flashing a mungo tan. Every girl crazy about a sharp dress. Man, he was a beast for love. He was a beast for love. He was a beast for love. All the monsters start that way. Yeah, you know they're beasts for love. You know they're beasts for love. You know they're beasts for love. All the monsters start that way.
Sheena Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. That's Dance Hall Pimps, Beast for Love. Before that, I'm No Prince Charming. My guest all this hour, guitarist Jeff Girard from the Dance Hall Pimps. Jeff, it's almost like paranormal rock.
Okay, I'll run with that.
I mean, well,
that was RJC. We just listened to sing, and on banjo too, by the way.
Fantastic. And it, yeah. You know, it's kind of like monsters and other dimensional things in the middle of a cool rock band. I love it.
Yeah, we even have a song about necrophilia.
It's basically something that's never been done before, and I don't say that very often on this show.
Well, you just don't see much. You don't see much necrophilia rock anymore.
So they could put like an iTunes. It'll like classify you as necro rock. And para rock and crypto rock.
A Pandora, there'll be a whole sub-channel.
Right. It's a cryptozoological rock and roll experience.
Yeah. Well, let's watch the subject of band. Let's just say everybody's names here.
Please.
15 seconds. We've got Vic Barrett on drums, Bruce Mesh on trumpet, that you just heard. He also plays keyboard. Steve Koch, saxophone, although that was Matt Lilly on the recording who was helping us out at the time. Eddie Fish on and shouting out, I want to say hi to my friend Kelly. Hi, baby.
That's awesome.
And
it's a cool looking band. If you see the band photo, it's a really cool looking band.
Yeah, we're kind of fashion victims, yeah.
Which is awesome. When do you expect the album out?
Oh, it's supposed to be out sometime in November.
That's fantastic.
Lakeshore has a schedule for it.
And if you played out a lot, I know that you're playing at the Viper Room May 14th, right?
Yeah, coming right up. You can go online to dancehallpimps.com and get discount tickets there. We would love to see you all there.
That's fantastic. And I want to play, for sure, I want to play Mommy Was a Zombie. I want to make sure to get that in. And I can't wait to hear more stuff from the album as it rolls. So let's play this, and then we'll come back and get all the information for your gig again, Jeff.
Sure, okay, great.
All this hour, my guest is Jeff Girard, fantastic guitarist, previously of the Motels and almost a heartbreaker. Now he's a dance hall pimp, and this song is called Mommy Was a Zombie. Check it out. It's the Sheena Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. Let's break for some great music.
Born in a morgue on a dead-end street, an example of urban decay. Mommy never took me to trick or treat. No wonder I ended up this way. Mommy was a zombie, I wasn't part of her plan. Mommy was a zombie, Daddy the invisible man. A part like Carrie Lovers used to sneak in at night. Carrie
diagnosis and some chloroquine. I finally found me zombie son. But my mommy was a zombie. I wasn't part of her plan.
The Sheena Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. That's the Dance Hall Pimps. Mommy Was a Zombie. My guest all this hour, Dance Hall Pimps guitarist Jeff Gerard. Jeff, it's just awesome. Did you guys know when you started putting songs together for the album that they were all going to have this kind of theme?
How do you mean?
That's awesome. I mean,
it's a great tree. RJ, he's just really got a facility for words. Like that song we just listened to, it sounds like, you know, a bunch of quotes from a monster movie, but it's really about a guy whose mom was so doped and drugged up that she was like a zombie.
Fantastic.
And his daddy was never around, so he might as well have been the Invisible Man. It's actually a pretty deep story.
It's awesome. It's one of those things that is very rare in music and very good, where people that are just partying can take it at face value. People that want to sit down and really listen to the lyrics can get the deep message. And with all kinds of art, film and fine art, I love that. I love when you get more the more you listen to it.
Yeah, it works on two levels. You don't have to bend over backwards to enjoy it, but if you look for more, it's there.
Right. If people just want to dress up like zombies and invisible men and come to your show and dance around, that's fine. But if they really actually get it and want to write you an intelligent email about the other meaning of it, then that's great too. It's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's fantastic. So, Viper Room, is that one of your favorite places in LA? Because it's one of mine.
Yeah, I like it. Close up. From my point of view as a musician, I love it because it has a curtain. You know, a curtain that closes and opens.
Yeah, isn't that nice? And some of the best sound, right? Really good sound guys.
Yeah, they really have. When you are out in the room, it's fantastic.
And that makes all the difference in whether you sound okay or you sound really, really good. And, you know, there's something, it's just a vanity thing, right? But there's something about the curtain opening that makes you feel like a rock star.
Well, it's practical. I mean, there's an exact moment when the show goes on, and it's right now because the curtain's going up. And then there's a practical end because I get to do all my housekeeping and fussing with my equipment and everything behind the curtain. You don't have to look at my butt when I bend over.
You know, I used to have this bass player. Well, he has actually my bass player again, and I love him. But at one point, because I front a theatrical comedy band called Beer Bong, and at one point, he was all into, like, having these gargoyles, and he shot confetti, and he had, you know, leather chaps, and he had a cannon that went off. I mean, all this stuff that he did, and he had a wireless mic, and without a doubt, every time the curtain went up, it was just butt crack, because he was always bending over his amp. And so we had to say, you know what, in L.A., with the way they get you on and off, we need to maybe only scale down the special effects maybe in half. And because it was great that he did all of that, but God, you just don't have any time in L.A. to get up on stage. And not that I don't think the first impression of my band should be a hairy butt crack. Maybe it should. Maybe that would even make the band better.
Yeah, there's certain parts of town where that would go over pretty well.
You are awesome. Would you come back and see me again, Jeff? I would love that.
Oh, I'd love to.
Maybe we could bring some of the guys in studio and do a little acoustic jam. That'd be fun.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And May 14th at the Viper Room, and where's the best place people can find you online?
Go to dancehallpimps.com. It's all right there.
Fantastic. Everybody, the wonderful Jeff Gerard, the band is Dance Hall Pimps, May 14th at the Viper Room in Hollywood. Make sure to email him and find out how to get tickets. And also look for the upcoming album coming out in the fall. And if you missed any of the links for how to find out about that Viper Room show, just go to SheenaMetalExperience.com or LATalkRadio.com, and I'll gladly forward those links over. It's the Sheena Metal Experience. This is LA Talk Radio. You know what we do here, people. Every Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, we rip the veil off the human sideshow and expose the creatures I like to call big old Homo sapiens at their most bizarre and always at their most beautiful. And it's true every day on the show, maybe my show. It is the Sheena Metal Experience, after all. That doesn't mean it's not always and forever, undoubtedly and indubitably. And you know what I'm going to say, people. It may be my show, but it's always your experience. Thanks for listening. Have a great night, and I'll see you all tomorrow.
You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.